Welcome to Royal Legacy, where we will explore the rich athletic history and deep family connections of BYU sports. Join us as we honor the past, celebrate the present, and look forward to the future of the BYU Cougars. Here's your host, Lauren McLean.
How's it going, everyone? I'm Lauren McLean, and welcome to Royal Legacy, where we dive deep into the family connections of BYU sports. Today, I'm joined by Provo's first ever female mayor, Michelle Cafusi, and her husband, Steve Cafusi, a former BYU and NFL football player and former defensive line coach for the BYU football team. Together, along with their five children, make up the first family of Provo. Thank you guys so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
This is going to be fun. It's been a little bit since I've been able to see you guys, except for in the 4th of July parade.
Yes.
Which is always so much fun. The name Cafusi is synonymous with Provo and BYU. Is that something you take pride in, Michelle?
I do. It's really fun being the mayor because I always, when there's an introduction at a big event and it's they see the name Cafusi, I always walk out on stage and I'm like, sorry if you're disappointed. I'm the mom. I'm the mayor. You probably were thinking it was going to be one of my boys or my husband and we were just going to talk sports all day. I don't even like sports, but I can run a city and it's kind of fun that way. I kind of have a lot of fun with it.
So how did that come about? You're not in, big into sports. I know you were a Cougarette.
I'm clumsy, though. I'm not great. I'm clumsy and left-handed, so all the things play against me when it comes to sports.
Wow. And incredible. You had five athletes. Let's talk about, because you grew up in Provo, Utah.
Right.
What made you decide to come to BYU and not want to kind of spread your wings and go somewhere else?
Well, it's really interesting. That's such a great question. So thank you. Being born and raised in Provo and a single mom and seven kids, we didn't even know if we would get to go to college, have the opportunity to go to college. We just knew that we were the free and reduced lunch kids and we were working. Our mom was working the graveyard shift at the hospital from 7 to 7 every night. And we knew by the age of 12, we were all contributing. I recall a wonderful woman say to me one time, you're really smart. Have you ever thought of going to college? And that literally was the first time I had thought about it. And I was probably a freshman at Provo High School. And I remember thinking, I want to go to college. I want to go across the street to college. And I went to my mom and she said, I'll never be able to afford that for you. But if you can figure out a way to get there, let's get you there. And I went and found my counselor, and she said, I can tell you how to get to BYU. This is what you have to do for the next 4 years. And I just took it to task. And I ended up going to BYU just a couple months after I graduated from high school on a full-ride academic scholarship and just felt like I had, you know, hit the jackpot because BYU was just everything. Just a little girl born and raised in Provo that didn't have really – influence of a lot of BYU around her other than the community.
Let's talk about your mom a little bit because I think that is what an incredible story. Her name is Janet, right? Yeah. And she passed away in 1998, single mom, enrolled in what is now Utah Valley University, and she became a nurse.
She did. She became a nurse. She had to do something quick that could help pay the bills. So nursing was where, and she was a nurturer. So it was a perfect fit.
And she worked the graveyard shift, you mentioned, and so she could be home with you guys. What was life like for you at that time?
We were the worst kids. I just remember thinking, because she died when I was around 30, and I just think she died of exhaustion because she just had to work so hard, and we all worked hard. But, you know, we were a lot of fun, and I'm sure the neighbors thought we were the rotten kids, and we probably were. But she was amazing and did the best she could. She was very strict. And her family's from Manti, Utah, so she didn't believe in welfare or, you know, she wouldn't take any help. It's just everyone work a little harder and we're going to make ends meet. And so many life lessons I learned from her of just, you know, grit and determination and a lot of having to grow up quick and be independent and being told no a lot and then still being able to accomplish different things has really served me well in my capacity as mayor.
What do you think her reaction would have been knowing that you are now the mayor of Provo?
She would be hilarious. She, you know, she could swear like a sailor and she was yet the most compassionate, loving person in the world, but she would be out knocking doors and I probably would have to control her a little. I think that I probably would because she'd be so proud and so excited and she loved Provo as well. And anyways, it's just, It's just crazy to even think that a little girl born at Utah Valley Hospital into the situation I was born into could end up being the first woman mayor of Provo. It's like a fairy tale.
Steve, let's go over to you. What made you want to come to BYU initially?
I think number one was, I took a recruiting trip to Hawaii, and it was a different experience. You know, everybody was partying, drinking on my trip, and I asked to be taken back to my hotel. And so when BYU came along, I was actually I was going to take my next trip was to Kansas, University of Kansas. And so then BYU showed up, kind of last minute and asked me if I could come the same week to Provo. So I was excited. I was hoping that they would take a look at me. I was down at Dixie College, junior college at the time in St. George. But I felt like, okay, this is BYU. I hope that Lavelle, Coach Edwards, will offer me a scholarship on my trip because I wanted to go to some – I just wanted to go to BYU because I knew some people there already. I had some cousins there already, and I wanted to be around an environment, that I'm with, LDS kids, around me, that help bear me up, and vice versa. And so that was the whole reason. Plus, it was close to Salt Lake. I didn't see my family, my parents coming out, maybe watching me a game, whether I was in Kansas or, Hawaii, but they can drive, 40 minutes to Provo, to watch a game. So those were a couple of reasons was that I just wanted to be around people, with, same moral values and, around LDS kids and close to home.
Let's go back to where it all began in 1986, I believe. Michelle, you were a Cougarette. Steve, you were on the BYU football team.
Well, this is horrible that we're starting there.
I heard there was a little controversy on how you guys met.
I don't like this story.
Let's start with Michelle. How did you two officially meet?
Well, we literally did not meet in Provo. We met at a hotel down at a bowl game.
That sounds bad.
Yeah, where the team was and the Cougarettes were staying and the team was
all
staying. Yeah. And I don't even know what bowl game. That's how much the sports part was to me. What bowl game was it?
The Freedom Bowl.
It was the Freedom Bowl.
Oh, it was the Freedom Bowl. It's the Freedom Bowl that we met at in the lobby. And you can take it from here.
Yeah. Well, we were in the Freedom Bowl, invited to go play there. And, a lot of the guys, we were there already, and I remember being at the pool with the guys and swimming. And I came out and decided to go back to my room while I was in the lobby, all the couches there. The Cougar girls were sitting there, and I was pushing the button, waiting for the elevator to go up to my room. And then I noticed one of the Cougarettes, her name was, we call her Missy. She goes by Diana. So we're forever grateful for her for introducing us. I saw Missy and, I waved, "Hey, Missy, how are you?" And, she got up and said, "Hi, Steve." And then we were just talking, and I was looking at all the girls sitting there on the couch. And Michelle caught my eye, and I said, "Missy, who's that right there?" And, that's Michelle Garrick. "Well, you'll have to introduce me to her." So Missy said, "Well, we're going to go to the pool here in a little bit. So if you want to come down, that's where we're going to be." So I went up and changed and then, walked down and went to the pool. And there they are playing around at the jacuzzi and the swimming pool and just sat there. She called Michelle over while we were in the lobby and, introduced her to me. And that was the beginning of it.
Was the rest history from there, or was there kind of a little bit of a roller coaster?
There was no history from there.
we came back to the winter semester, okay, and I don't think we met up until, February, March?
Yeah, you had surgery or something.
Yeah, and so, after the season I had surgery, but we ran into each other again at the Smithfield House. She was, I think you guys were taking some kids around, showing them BYU. And that's how we ran into each other again. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Hey, we need to go out, you know. You know, so, okay, well, give me a call, you know. But that's after that, it was just, yeah.
I love it. Did you guys have any idea the legacy you were about to create with the union between the two of you?
No. I had no idea. I'm like, Steve, you should have given me a disclaimer that not only sports, but he's like the oldest son and the golden child. And I didn't know the culture that the oldest son is like the king and all the things. He has to conduct everything and beat everything.
Not even.
There's a lot. And it's really fun and it's a great part of the culture. But then just to have our kids just be huge and I may not be competitive as far as sports, but I'm a really good cook and I know how to cook big. Like I have commercial size pots and pans because I can cook a meal up like you wouldn't believe. And that really served me well.
What is it like now that your kids are all grown and have kids of their own? Because I can't even imagine when your kids were teenagers. I just what they consumed. What's it like when everyone gets together, everyone's in the Kapusi household?
That's still every day. Can you please tell them it's not supposed to be every day, that they are supposed to have
Corbin,
moved on from
Alexis.
That? Yeah, everyone still shows up.
Are you still cooking for them? Like, what's life like
on Sunday?
Now?
Yeah, on Sunday, wow. I go really big. And then if they, like during the week, if I am able to get home before 7 at night, we'll shoot out a text of, come up and let's have spaghetti. And because it's just, they love each other. They all love each other, and I love that they love each other. So we try and keep that going. And food brings them together, and it always has, and I'm sure it always will.
I love it. I can see that. And I've interviewed a few of your children, and food is definitely the theme of their reunions, and as it should be. So you guys, you get married. You have these five beautiful and gigantic children, right? And they become these amazing athletes. And the name Kapusi was already, because of Steve here, you know, known for football. Then you have these kids that carry on the legacy. So sports is kind of life for you. And then Steve, your wife comes to you and says, I want to run for mayor. What's your reaction?
At first I thought, wow, you know, I was worried. I was scared for her because, you know, politically, I know how, you know, everybody's got an opinion. And
and it wasn't my first elected office. I first ran for school board and won.
Okay.
So I was already on the school board as the school board president when the mayoral seat opened up.
Yeah. That wasn't too bad, right?
Yeah.
Just school board stuff, easy, you know, nobody screaming at her.
It's children. We love the children.
But when people have asked, hey, I think you ought to run for mayor. She came home and told me that. I was a little afraid for her. Like, gosh, does she have thick skin to deal with, you know, that's like a whole nother level from school board, right? So that was my worry, was just, you know, people saying mean things and lying and, you know, you know, we see that all the time in the political arena. So that was my concern, is just, does she have thick skin to deal with this, you know? But who am I to tell her what to do, right? She was on my corner for, you know, my whole football career and even coaching. And I always felt like that she has talents and that she, you know, she loves service. And she was always out in the community with the kids, you know, from PTA president to just volunteering to do whatever, fundraising stuff. And so she was good at it. Once she puts her mind to something, she's very passionate about, you know, accomplishing those things. So I said, look, I'm going to support you. If that's what you want to do, you know, let's do it. You know, and so off we went.
Mm. Michelle, while Steve was playing football and coaching football, you're quoted as saying, while being a stay-at-home mom, I'm the mom who always puts academics above any sporting event. If they didn't have their piano done, they didn't go to practice. So how did you go from that stage of life to then turning to, I think I want to be more involved in my community and in politics?
That's such a great question. And I am that mom. And the boys will always say, our mom was strict. They would have their football helmets on, pounding on the piano, and their ride would be out there honking. They'd be stressed, and I'd be like, seven more minutes. And just on them, trying to get balance in their lives. I always feel like sports kids can go really all sports because it's all consuming. And I was always trying to be a balancer for the kids. And so reading was a big part of our lives growing up. Academics was huge. I'm sure the boys told you that the rule was they couldn't leave BYU until they handed me their diploma because they were not going to be those kids that got drafted and went into the NFL and then came back with nothing and had to go back to college. And so they love to tell the stories of how strict I was, but I'm telling you, it builds character and they're better for it. And the balance and where my kids went, I wanted to be. So like Steve said, we were completely engaged in everything. If there was a need for a park, sign me up and I'll bring my kids with me and we'll fundraise. And the kids were saying the other night, they can't even remember a time where they haven't been in a church gym cleaning up or at some community event handing stuff up or picking up garbage. And I just said, isn't that a great way to be raised?
Yeah.
It's a great way to be raised.
100%. And something I love about your kids is every single one of them, they are happy, they are kind, and they are good. You just see that in them. And I'm sure it's so much to do with the two of you and how you raise them. So you did a good job, Michelle.
Well, and their dad. Their dad is the peacemaker and the calm.
Yes. When he's one of the best. We love him at BYU. As the first ever female mayor of Provo, one of the first females in Utah politics.
I know. Can you believe that?
Yes.
Crazy.
Amazing. Like Steve was mentioning, as he was worried about some of the pressure and things that would be said to you, how have you been able to handle those types of moments, that pressure, those doubts, and those naysayers that are coming towards you?
So that is just such a huge part of being in the political world. And it is what keeps so many people out of it.
Yeah.
Because it's terrifying to step into the arena and just take all of that when it's really easy to say things and point fingers and criticize when you're not in the seat. But when you're in the seat and you know all the background stories, you have to step up and you can't tell the whole story a lot of the time.
Right.
And you just have to take it. The part that gets hard is sometimes when people get backed into a corner, they'll get really personal.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just human as can be still. And I remember crying at the office one time and my chief of police and my fire chief came in to talk to me and they're like, the mayor's crying. We've never had a mayor cry. I'm like, I'm crying, you guys. I'm your first woman mayor. Just get me some tissues. I'll be over it in a minute. And so it's really good. But I'll tell you, it's been fascinating as well because my skill set of being a mother, I have utilized it more than I ever thought I would as the mayor. There are moments in the day where I think, okay, I've already dealt with a situation similar to this with my three sons fighting over a sword, basically. But there is so many lessons and skills you learn throughout life that when you finally get to a position that you have to pull all your knowledge, all your talents, all your abilities, you pull from everywhere. And being a mother is something I pull from every day.
Mm. And I love that you cried because I feel like a lot of women in politics feel like they need to become more like a man.
Oh, I cry all the time.
And I just love that you are yourself and you bring your own gifts and talents to that. I think that's incredible. Steve, from your point of view, what's something people might misunderstand about what it takes to run the city as you've watched your wife do it?
Gosh, misunderstand. Well, I guess that, you know, the mayor is human just like everybody else, right? Especially being a woman, I feel like sometimes there are people out there who feel entitled. You know, they feel like that maybe they have money and they have businesses and they can come into her office and, you know, raise their voice and demand stuff, you know. And you know, it hurts me when she comes home and I say, look, you need to have, a police in there sitting with you or your deputy mayor, because I know those people. I meet them all the time, you know, in football, you know, whether it's parents, you know, and think their kids are the best. And so you know who those people are. And so, I always give her a pep talk, you know. Don't let them come in. Just excuse them and say, sorry, this meeting's over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not going to come in here and talk like that to me. Okay, when you're ready to have a a conversation and, you know, the right way, then you can come back.
Yeah.
You know, but I always feel like the, you know, the men are always, you know, feel like they can come in there and kind of bully her.
Yeah.
You know, but she's so much stronger. I mean, she, you know, it's like something happened to the kids. She's the one on the stands that's going to be, you leave my son alone or my daughter, you know. You know, I know when she goes to that, you know, that little space. Yeah. So if someone, you know, she'll bark back. But, yeah, that's one thing I notice is that, you know, there's a lot of people there that, you know, think they can bully her because she's a woman.
I know a few 6'8", 6'10 bodyguards that you could hire to come help you out with that. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll have more from Steve and Mayor Michelle Cafusi. You're listening to Royal Legacy.
What's up, everyone? This is Lauren McClain. If you like my podcast, make sure you check out Deep Blue, hosted by Jason Shepherd. He chats with BYU Cougars, both current and former, about their personal journeys, challenges, and triumphs. Check it out wherever you get your podcasts or on the BYU Radio app.
And now back to Royal Legacy and your host, Lauren McClain.
Welcome back to Royal Legacy. I'm Lauren McClain. I'm here with husband and wife, former BYU football player Steve Cafusi and the mayor of Provo and former Cougarette, Michelle Cafusi. Steve, your parents, and tell me how you pronounce his name. Petelo.
There you go.
And Eveline.
Eveline
Cafusi. Yeah. Beautiful names. Arrived from Tonga in 1972. All six of the Cafusi sons grew up to play college football for either the Utes or the Cougars. Five of the grandsons have played for BYU, with Devin playing for both schools. Your brother Jeff has three sons, Micah Jackson and Isaiah Cafusi, who we had back on the show back in November. How did your parents, Steve, establish a football family? What was the emphasis like growing up for you guys?
Gosh, that's a good question. I think moving here, we didn't have much, right? You know, my mom and dad both worked. We were, you know, literally I was 8 when we moved here, literally trying to fit in, trying to learn English, going to school. So at the time, we didn't really, you know, we, like today, you know, kids signed up to play in sports. Like, we didn't even know there's such a thing. So growing up, it was, you know, playing at the cultural hall, you know, at the church, you know. That's where we hung out a lot. And then there was a police athletic league down the street that, you know, we learned about. And that's how we kind of got into going, playing there. And they had boxing and, you know, you can do things. So we really, growing up, we never really did competitive little, you know, sports. And it wasn't, like, I didn't play football until I was in 10th grade.
Wow.
And so, you know, we played the Tongan rugby, you know, had some going in different places. So didn't know much about the high school sports that was going on. But when we were practicing rugby, that's one of the coaches walked by. Hey, we don't have enough guys on our team. You know, do you want to learn how to play football? Oh, we don't know how. You know, well, I can teach you, you know. So I thought it was pretty cool, you know, wow, you put pads on, you know, you could hit harder, you know, and so, and I loved it. So I stuck with it. And then, you know, I wasn't playing at all at first year because I didn't know what I was doing, but that's kind of how, and again, this is in high school, the rest of the kids, we were never put in competitive team sports yet.
Yeah.
Although we were playing a lot
yeah.
at the chapel or at the police athletic league down the street. So, but that's kind of how it is really started for us. I mean, we were active, you know, we had a landscaping business. And so all the boys, we, you know, drove around and cut, you know, homes and stuff. So that was keeping us active.
Yeah.
And dad never wanted to, you know, rent a backhoe. He made us break up the cement and do all the hard things. Like, gosh, you know, dad, you know, you can get this thing and, you know, it'll just lift it and then make the job go faster.
Nope.
No, we're going to save money. You guys, it'd be a good workout for you guys. So that was how we grew up. And then, you know, being a senior, I really didn't, I wasn't good enough. You know, nobody noticed me. I was just, again, learning how to play football. But I felt like, gosh, you know, I love this game. I want to play. So when one of the coaches came down from Dixie College to recruit some of our players, they saw me running around on film and said, hey, how would you like to, you know, call me in? How would you like to come and play for us? Oh, okay. You know, so that's kind of, but it wasn't until after my mission. I played my first year, went on my mission and came back And then started playing. All of a sudden, I started getting letters, you know, and I got my first offer was from UNLV. And I said to the coach, hey, what's this? What's this about? Don't you know what that is? No, tell me. It's a scholarship offer. They're going to pay for, you know, for you to go play. Really? I was excited to go back to my dorms and call my mom and said, hey, mom, this is how we're going to go to college. You know, the kids, sign him up. You know, sign him up. I think there's like Little League somewhere, you know. Yeah. I started learning a little bit about, you know, there is Little Leagues that the kids can sign up. So, you know, mom, you know, kind of signed up the kids that way. And but all the little ones got a chance to play a little more, you know, football than I did, you know, until school. But that's kind of how we started.
So you're the oldest son. So you really were the one, it sounds like, that got the rest of the guys into football. You kind of paved the way for the rest of your family.
Yeah, I was the oldest. So I, you know, I thought, wow, this, because we never even thought of going to college. You know, we were poor. How is my mom and dad going to afford this, you know? Even though our heart, we want to go to school, but how do we, yeah. We don't have any money to do that, you know, let alone, you know, just, we didn't know there was a community college. We could have gone that, but it was just, again, part of growing up here in Salt Lake City, trying to learn and fit in, and learn what's around you and learning from our friends, you know, and people in our ward. You know, just trying to, you know, live the American dream like everybody else.
Yeah. So you're like, Mom, sign up my brothers because I found a way for them to be able to go to college. You played at BYU, obviously, after Dixie, drafted in the NFL in 1988, coached at Utah, and then came back to coach at BYU. What originally drew you back to Provo and the Cougars?
Well, when I left here, I didn't finish school. You know, when I got drafted. So I left, I want to say
hence
about
that's why your wife was like, you will get your degrees to your sons, right?
Yeah. And so I went and did, I think I was gone 5 years away from BYU. And then, you know, after you get let go from the NFL, it's okay, what do I do? You know, there was a few options of things to do. You know, my dad said, hey, you want to come landscape like me? I said, no, Dad, that was hard work, you know? But, you know, I thought, you know, I need to go back to school. You know, I looked at Michelle. I looked at my, you know, kids at the time. You know, that's the right thing to do. So I came back, came and saw the, you know, athletic director and talked to them about me coming back to school. They were able to help me, you know, pay for my school. You know, so I took advantage of that and came back. And at the time I was married, it was probably the best grades I've had. You know, because obviously I contribute that to my wife. Yeah, you know.
Did you, Michelle, did you push Steve kind of like you do to your kids?
I was like, this is not okay. Let's get back to BYU and get that degree. And then let's get you into a master's program.
Yeah. But that's how I came back to finish school. At the time, I never thought about graduate school. But, you know, that's the route I need to go. And so I remember going into Lavelle Edwards. How do I become a graduate assistant? You know, I want to go to graduate school. I saw he wrote my name on his little pad. I noticed there was like a bunch of names on that pad. And I thought, okay, maybe this. But anyways, I kept going to school and kept checking back with him over the next year. You know, they never really said anything. But that's so my brother Jeff was being recruited at the time. So he asked me, hey, University of Utah coaches are coming to, you know, meet mom and dad. Can you be here? So I drove up Salt Lake, sat there, and the first time I ever met Ron McBride. Mm-hmm. You know, at the time they had, you know, Fred Whittingham and Kyle Whittingham was just coming into the program. Mm-hmm. And so met Ron McBride, and after the family meeting, you know, Coach McBride asked me, what are you doing? Well, I'm back home. I'm finishing school up at BYU and waiting to see if I can be a graduate assistant there. So I can go to graduate school. And how would you be interested in University of Utah? You know, he kind of threw that at me. Yeah, I'd be interested. You know, I never always thought, well, it's an opportunity.
Yeah.
I said, why don't you do this? You know, go think about it. You can have a graduate position at University of Utah if you want. I said, oh, can you give me overnight so I can go home and talk to my wife about it and then maybe get back to you tomorrow? I went home that night. We couldn't sleep. You know, my wife and I talked about it, And yeah, I thought, wow, we can sit here and hold our breath for BYU to wait for them and give me an opportunity and lose this other opportunity.
Right.
So we prayed about it, and we felt really good. Like, hey, we need to just, even though our heart's here at BYU,
yeah,
but I feel like we need to let go and go where the opportunity comes. Mm. So that's how I ended up at the University of Utah. So I drove up there the next day and started filling up my papers and sending them all my – report cards and things, and started that application and got accepted. So that's how I ended up there, being a GA. And then after that, got hired, after that winter semester. So I spent, I think it was 8 years up there, and then, came back here to BYU after.
Always wearing a little bit of blue under your red shirt, right? Michelle, Cafusi's are all over BYU and Utah football. You have a unique perspective into this, I feel like. Is there any rivalry tension in the family that you've noticed?
Well, we're diehard BYU. I'm the mayor of Cougartown,
right.
So we're all BYU. I actually had a red sweatshirt on somewhere, and someone grabbed a photo and put it up and was like, our mayor looks horrible in red. Why are you wearing red? Blue's your color. It was hilarious, but I love it. And the rivalry is a lot of fun with the Cafusi family. And we forever will be grateful to Ron McBride for giving Steve the opportunity to get his master's degree, plus, just jump into coaching right out of the gate. That was a true gift to our family, and forever grateful for that opportunity that just opened door after door. But we always knew we wanted to raise our kids in Provo, and Steve just felt like Provo was paradise. And so as the opportunity started to come for us to come back to Provo and coach at BYU, you had a couple. And then the minute they hear you're going, then they want to talk to you about staying at Utah. It was a little bit of back and forth. But deep down, I knew I wanted to raise my kids here. And Steve's heart was, just BYU. He loved BYU. So we were really excited to finally take the jump and come back home. And I've brainwashed all my kids. They all live in Provo. And we'll stay in Provo now with
even
their mama.
Devin.
Yeah.
Devin's back in Provo?
He is. Well, sometimes we have to just say... Give him a little grace.
Yes.
We forgive him.
It's all right. We all forgive you, Devin. You're the parents of five kids, Bronson, Corbin, Alexis, Devin, and Daryl.
Yes.
Bronson, Corbin, Devin played football. Alexis played basketball. Daryl played soccer. Steve, as parents of high-performing athletes, how did you make sure their character came before their sports?
God, I think just, growing up, what my wife and I, wanted to teach our kids, right? And I think we owe it all to the gospel in our life, and the godly parents helping us, guiding us. And then we, in return, did that really for our kids, And my wife touched a little bit on it. It was just really finding balance. Yeah, as parents, you can create monsters in your kids, but really that there's playing sport, but I think there's also discipline and tough love, always need to bring them back to earth, so they don't, sometimes their head get too big and proud, a little bit arrogant, and sometimes they get a little mean, so there's times of just humble them. I think that's important to keep them grounded, and the kids need that in their life, so they don't just think that they're all it and sports and I'm the best, and so just keeping them humble and again teaching them that there are more important things than football,
yeah.
So it's not who you are, it doesn't define who you are,
yeah.
So. It's all about the other stuff because, again, here's your football and here's the rest of your life. So it's, when football's over, when sports is over, who are you, And, there's more to you than, than football or basketball.
Michelle, you mentioned some of the boundaries and rules that you set in your home to keep church and school a priority during sports season. So you mentioned they were, banging on the piano, hurried to try and get out the door, but you made them do it.
Yes, I did.
What made it so important for you as your kids were growing up to put those things first before sports?
Well, they were gifted. They had a natural, all of them had this amazing natural talent that just would draw them to sports. And they hardly had to work at it and were good at it. And that was too easy. So I would try and, again, just balance their lives a little. I would make him go with me to BYU Theater once in a while. Just try and think of things to get them out of that headspace that everything's sports. Mm-hmm. And I would say things like, we have to have other things in our life because we're literally one injury away from taking a break from sports. And then what do we have? And, you know, sure enough, we experienced a lot of injuries. I mean, I remember our first ACL being blown out and the devastation of that and me crying and them crying and a year recovery. And then we had like four more and it was no big deal. We just knew we were in it for a whole year for recovery for each one of the kids and just things like that that just helped us remind ourselves that there's so much more to life. And the gospel and family are priorities in our family. Those things matter. And we put a lot of emphasis, and not just the seven of us. It was extended family really counts. And we go out and we support our extended family. And in return, they support us. And it just has really been a good balance for the kids.
Steve, speaking of balance, how did you balance being a dad and a coach? Because those can be two completely different things of how you treat somebody or a player. How did you balance those two things when you had to?
I don't know. No, I always, you know, I hang my hat on the saying, you know, you treat people like you want to be treated, you know. And whether it's the head coach or AD all the way down to the janitor of, you know, there at our building. And it's just making them feel important. And I think, and then, you know, even players, right? The walk on, you know, compared to the, you know, a five-star, a four-star, a three-star player. Sometimes they feel entitled. And so there's times, you know, just like humbling your kids, there's times that you need to humble them because, you know, it's very competitive, right? You know, they come across very confident and whatever. But it's just, you know, there's, you know, you can tell as a coach, there's time for you to, you know, tough love, you know, to give that player. He needs it right now, you know. So that's what I always just try to do is, you know, but always give them positive too. Yeah. If you're going to be, you know, negative, you know, make sure you always finish with the positive.
With something positive. You got to always find something positive there at the end.
There you go.
When we had Bronson and Hillary on last year, they told a story about you, Steve, pulling up Hillary on Facebook during a team meeting and breaking it down if she'd be a good fit for Bronson. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Yeah. What's your side of that story?
gosh, I'm trying to remember. Who was it? Well, we were getting ready for a defensive line meeting. So everybody comes in and, you know, one of the players, I can't remember if it's who it was, said, hey, coach, you know, there's a girl here that's, you know, it's asking about Bronson. And said, oh, yeah, who is she? You know, and he comes over and, you know, got out of our little football, you know, practice window and, let me see, you know, looked her up, you know, there she is, you know, and everybody's in there. Oh, well, you know, she's cute. And, you know, but that's how I ended up finding out a little bit about Hillary, not knowing, have they met yet?
Yeah.
Or are they going, you know, when are they going to meet up?
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, as a dad, you know, you're always curious.
Oh, yeah.
About, okay, who is this young lady?
You got to tease your kids a little bit, too.
Yeah.
When you have the opportunity. Luckily, Hillary can take it. She's incredible. You guys are now grandparents to seven grandkids. Michelle, what's better, being a parent or a grandparent?
Oh, a grandparent. The grandkids are perfect. They can do no wrong in my eyes. And I told the parents all the time, I will never say no to these kids. So if you don't want them to have chocolate milk and bubble gum all day, you be in here and you say no, because I already said no for a lot of years. Mm-hmm. And they are just such a gift and a blessing and so innocent and so sweet. And they are just the reward of all rewards. We feel so blessed.
You got to watch Grandma. She sneaks a lot of sweet stuff
That's what grandmas are for.
And I always tell her, look, their mom's going to get mad if you do that.
Mom doesn't have
They're
to
not
know.
Here.
It's all right.
They're not here.
You both have led in very different but demanding arenas, football and politics. What have you learned from watching each other be in the spotlight and lead in your various roles? Let's start with Michelle. What have you learned about Steve, watching him lead in the football arena?
He has some skills that I really admire and try and implement in my own skill set. And one of them is he's very calm, and he'll pause. And I have a little more fire in me. And so that's been a very helpful skill that I admire that he has, where I have tried to think, okay, now if someone's yelling and pointing in Steve's face, you know, I want to slap their hand down or something. Mm-hmm. But Steve stays calm. I've seen him do it. He stays calm. He hears them out. And I admire that skill, and I've tried to master that skill. Another thing he is really good at is he never shows emotion. He'll stay calm, even though he probably doesn't, because then he'll come home and tell the truth. But he just really is good at controlling his emotions. And I have tried, and I think about it often when I'm in a situation, to try and stay calm, make eye contact, control everything, control the situation the best you can, and then just walk away and sleep on it and let it settle. And that's been a wonderful lesson for me to learn from him as I've watched him in the public eye. Mm-hmm. And he loves those kids he coached. Oh, yeah. He just is so much more than football players to him. Those were his kids, and we stay in touch with them all. And when they see us and we see them, we have them over with their kids. And mm-hmm. It's just been a real gift to our whole family, this family of coaching and this family of football. It really has been an ongoing blessing for us.
I love that. And I've always viewed you as like Bishop Kafusi.
He's been a bishop.
I know. And you just have that demeanor about you, everything that Michelle said. Because I'm fiery like you. That's my go-to. I'm like, I'll spit it at you quick. So I admire those that have demeanors like that. So, Steve, what about you? What have you seen in Michelle as she's been in this role that you've really learned to admire about her?
Gosh, like I said earlier, you know, I was worried about her getting into politics because of all the, you know, negativity and people wanting certain, you know, different things and getting on her face. But I've been pleasantly surprised how much she has grown from being in the school board to being a mayor. You know, this is what, her second term, and this is her eighth year.
Yeah, 14th
and
year,
you know, she's
holding up political office.
I thought maybe she's ready to go on a mission or something, but she's,
I'm on a mission.
She says,
"You are."
She tells me, "Honey, I feel like I have the energy to, you know, go four more years, mm-hmm. you know, and I love to see my projects, you know, get them to the finish line, and so forth." And I guess, well, hey, let's do it, you know. So I support her, and I've watched her grow over the years. And how she's handled things, but she's such a bridge builder. She's such a easy, you know, to talk to person. Building relationships, and you know, no matter where she goes, she's always building relationships. Whether it be, you know, back in D.C. or here in our state, and you know, in the county, it's been amazing to see her. Just, you know, she makes friends everywhere she goes, and. But that's her strength, and she's got a lot of energy. I don't know where she gets it, but I've known her. She's always been active, you know, from running all the time and wearing out one of her knees. She's already got one of her knees worn out, so she's got a knee replacement. And I try to remind her, don't be running on that knee.
I'm sure she loves
but
the reminders.
But she's still
running on it.
Yeah, you know, she loves the outdoors and she hikes a lot. And I think that's keeping her, you know, feeling young and feel, you know, the energy that I've talked about, because, you know, she has a lot more than I do, mm-hmm. for sure. Yeah. She keeps me going.
I'm here with Steve Kafusi and Mayor Michelle Kafusi. I know you guys are so busy, so I appreciate you coming on. It's just been incredible. I've learned so much, and you guys are amazing. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Well, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Steve and Mayor Michelle Cafusi for coming on the show with me. Annie Robinson and Christy Solomon helped produce this episode with senior producer Terry South. You can join the Royal Legacy wherever you get your podcasts on Apple, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, or on BYUradio.org. Royal Legacy is a production of BYU Broadcasting.